Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Kyle Kashuv Show. I am sitting down today with Rune, who is an astute technology brother and internet Twitter shitposter. Rune, welcome to the pod.
Hello, how's it going?
Good, man. I haven't done one of these in a very long time. Yeah, like half procrastinating, and then I really wanted to get you on because I think you're one of the most interesting characters on like the wild side of Twitter.
Sure.
I'm like consistently astounded by you know, you'll ever have some like friends on Twitter and they post something like really intelligent and you're like, oh, this is not just like a shitposter. This is someone who's like deeply smart.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. All right. So you have been memeing into the discourse. This sounds like a very like NPR intro to the segment, being like, tell us about these like two words. You're like, you know, interesting Indian boy on Twitter.
Yeah.
But like, tell, like, you came up with word cell and shape rotator. Mm-hmm. And as funny as it is, there's like some truth behind it. So just like walk us through this entire saga.
Okay, sure. I mean, some of this is always going to be like post hoc rationalization, right? Like when things take off, you invent like a narrative for like why you're the genius that came up with it or something. But really, I don't know. It's all organic. It as much of a product as the audience as it is of me. But I think like April 2021, like people were shitposting about like IQ tests in my corner of Twitter. And they're like, this is stupid. Like, how can you ascribe value to somebody for their ability to rotate boxes in their head? And I thought that was really funny because, like, on a level, it's true. Like, that seems like a very strange way to measure somebody's aptitude, like cognitive aptitude, right? But at the same time, then I took a test, right? Because it was, like, going around. And I did just way better on the shape part of it. So
yeah.
I started just making tons of jokes about, you know, never trust an MF who has his like shape rotation better than his like verbal IQ or whatever. And then I just like started calling myself a rotator, ironically, and it took off. Other people started doing it too. And then people would just tag me in various shape rotation memes they saw across Twitter. Right. And like, it was there before me. Like, I wasn't the first guy to talk about, you know, people would be like, how many cubes can you omnidirectionally rotate in your head? Or like, even before that, there are people like, can you even imagine a cow spinning in your head? You know, it's just like making fun of like aphantasiacs, I guess, like people who don't have great visual imagination. But like, I think I kind of made it into like an identity or whatever. And It actually organically came up with the word cell thing like much later in an argument with like Logo Daedalus. You probably know him.
Yeah, I like know the account. I know he goes on like, you know, like 178 post threads about, you know, why certain like weird niche things are the way they are. And it's just like completely detached from reality.
Yeah, right. I mean, he gets clowned a lot on Twitter, and I'm not going to lie, I was just being opportunistic, and I tweeted at him, like, Logo Daedalus has never rotated a shape in his life or something, and he got mad. He almost immediately blocked me. He did, like, a long thread about, like, you know, why I'm, like, a terrible devil-worshipping, like, machine learning demon summoner.
Is there any substance to that, though?
I think some of the metaphors about machine learning are correct, like summoning weird entities from the ether, you know.
We'll get into that.
We can get into that. But the point being, like, he took the bait, right? Like, he really fucking took the bait. I just wanted to elicit a response from him, and it was like better than anything I could have ever imagined. And it was also like unhinged and like just unintelligible to people outside of Logo Twitter. And like, I know my part of Twitter also uses its own like weird niche in-group vocab, but I think we're actually not half bad at communicating it or like relating to normal people or tech Twitter or whatever. That's why it caught on tech Twitter, right? If we weren't accessible, it would not have like ever escaped. But his Twitter is like really fucking clandestine, like sitting in a basement studying like CIA, you know, recently revealed documents with Contbot or some shit, and talking about how the CIA is giving like occult rituals, which is probably true.
Yeah. I mean, every kind of like day I wake up and I go like, maybe the conspiracy theorists were like right about even more than I thought they were.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But yeah, like, so then I called him like a word cell in one of those threads, or like, I was like, yeah, he's a total word cell. It was like a throwaway line. It was not meant to be like some like extreme.
Well, it's derived from incel, or at least the cell is.
I mean, yeah, but also no. I want to like remove it from the incel origin, because, you know, the journalists are running away with this. They're calling it like 4chan terminology. And it's true. It is like sort of 4chan-y, but the thing is, like, even on like Reddit or early Twitter or whatever, people would just say a word plus cell to like, you know, call a person. They're kind of being like, they're kind of self-sabotaging themselves with the word in question. Like, people would call each other like gym cells, you know? Someone that was addicted to the gym to the detriment of their life or something.
Yes.
Because they're so obsessed with it, right? And so there's like natural extensions to that, especially with something like word cell, which is like, this guy is literally addicted to these verbal abstractions in a way that is mildly ruining his life, or like, you know, just not necessarily ruining his life, but making it hard for him to communicate or whatever. So I guess that's where that came from. It was like very intuitive, and it took off from there. I guess people liked it, and I have enough of an audience where even like throwaway lines will, I don't know, someone will notice and try and repeat it or something.
Yeah. So like, we'll get into how you've been able to build like Rune Cult on Twitter later on. But, you know, I think it's like a really easy dichotomy for the world we're living in. I think it sort of like at a lowbrow level, some people have used it as sort of shape rotators are people who are innovating sort of step functions. And word cells are just like slow, like incremental optimization. And it's also kind of, I think Balaji had a tweet where you said that rotators are just high math. And are able to do like shape rotation, and then word cells are hyperbole.
I think it's actually the opposite of what you said. I mean, forget the SAT stuff. I think that's not a great mapping for what Balaji said, but it seems to me more like, you know, word people can make like giant leaps in science and philosophy and history or whatever, but oftentimes what they're writing is garbage. Their verbal abstractions are shit. But when they're not, they end up, you know, creating like the concept of democracy or something, right? And then changing the world because of that. Whereas ML people, shape rotators, quote unquote, they're mostly just optimizing. In fact, what they do is like, you know, make the ad machine slightly better. I talk about that in that post a little bit, like how the exceptional word cells, maybe we can call off word chads if we want to like take myself seriously, but that, you know, they become presidents and poets and authors and whatever, and everybody else kind of fails and their abstractions don't become relevant at all. So
there was it slightly ties into Thiel going that crypto is sort of libertarian and AI is communist. How does this, does this tie into the distinction of like word shell shape rotator? Cause, Vitalik has also jumped in on this with his own take.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I did not quite understand what Vitalik was talking about, but, I was just kind of stunned that Vitalik was talking to me, somewhat starstruck. So I didn't take too much time to examine his argument. The serious geniuses are good at both worlds, right?
Right. Sort of like general intelligence. If you're really good at math, you tend to be really good at English. And so you need that. You need to have the skills of actually explaining your research and what you've come up with. One of the things that I think is interesting about, I would say like your side of Twitter, and I've kind of moved a little bit there, is being able to legitimate ideas and sort of like memeing things into the discourse is something that Twitter is really good at.
Yeah.
And so for a while it was Lindy was the word. Yeah. And so at sort of like a low brow level, you're like, it's a meme, but like at a high level, you say like, no, this is actually shaping culture and the way we see the world. No, it is. Like the fact that all of VC and tech Twitter are using it shows that there's some truth to it, right?
Yeah. Maybe that's a black pill on VC Twitter, but
what do you mean?
I don't know. Not to rag on them, but like they seem to be taking it a bit too seriously, you know?
Yeah. I've seen that. A lot of the VCs on my timeline are not even, I think, are just coming up with new words that have come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And we're kind of just, they're kind of memeing this to death.
Yeah, a little bit. They're going to run into the ground, but I'm trying to get my 15 minutes of fame in. And,
well, good. You should. I mean, you should. We should put you on the Today Show, you know?
Yeah.
We could like have some fun. You could do a dance with Ellen and then she'll talk about war, you know, hiding war crimes, and she'll have the Bushes on and it'll be like a very nice thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, the other thing that happens when you gain the sort of like niche micro celebrity influence is first of all, like the e-girls will flock to you. And the second thing is Taylor Lorenz will show up in your replies and declare a fatwa. Mm-hmm. I mean, how are
you? The best of the e-girls.
Right. I mean, she's like 42 and, you know, she like acts like she's like 15 on like TikTok.
Yeah.
So she's doing her thing. How are you? How are you handling the flames?
I'm not worried. Actually, like, I'm pretty unfazed, I think, in a way that's like surprising to most people around me. They're like, I don't know. But it just feels very surreal. I'm like detached from it. Even Taylor Lorenz, like, what can she do to me? Like, she can find my real name, tweet it out, and then what? Like, my boss is gonna know that I make terrible jokes on Twitter. Okay, like that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm not really like a political account. I'm not worth like hunting down like some screenshot where I said something bad like 10 years ago. I'm not worth that much, right?
I don't know if that's true. I've seen random people, like completely like random moms and dads in like the Midwest, like get hit by the New York Times for something they did like 10 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
Do you think that like being synonymous on the internet has granted you some leeway? I have like this consistent sort of tweet that I think like the smartest people on the internet are like anonymous shit posters. And I say this kind of jokingly, but I believe it. No, I believe it. Mm-hmm. Whenever I tweet that like to some extent about like your side of Twitter.
Sure.
Because you're able to say, like if you're anonymous, you're able to say things in the full throated capacity they need to be said versus, you know, a lot of people, once the big problem with notoriety, a big problem with sort of like the DC world is once you get so entrenched, you become friendly with a lot of people and you don't want to stop getting invited to parties or lose friends. And so you change your language and you soften it and you self-censor. And so to some extent, you think the ability you've been able to speak clearly is because you are able to operate anonymously.
I think those things that you mention are literally unavoidable consequences of social clout, you know? Like, it doesn't matter if you're a cartoon avatar or, like, a real name. Yeah, a real name's got to be a little bit more scared. But I also find it that even though I'm anonymous, the longer time goes on, the more constraints there are on what I say, right? Because, like, Sam Altman followed me once because I made, like, you know, kind of a sort of rude joke about, like, his parties being, like, I don't know, full of a certain type of person. And but I can't, like, in my right mind, just continue making fun of Sam Altman now that he's following me. Like, I love the guy. I love what he's doing.
Right. I
love the mission of OpenAI. And so without a doubt, there's like a narrowing of the mind. But I don't know. I think that I've learned to kind of surf the waves and like generate enough goodwill and like cash it in by being edgy in other ways and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like to some extent, there's a certain, and this is, I'm talking specifically about NFTs. There is an inability to voice disagreement without it being seen as a personal attack.
Yeah.
For a lot of it, I think that's really bad. I think it's eroding what progress could be done, like to the extent of what we could be building. It seems like a lot of people have very fragile egos on like can't take jokes, really.
Yeah.
And so like even if it's like clearly a lighthearted joke, people will take it personally.
Right.
I think to some extent it's an age gap. I think if you, a lot of young people like clearly will understand it's a joke. Mm-hmm. Like if you called me a word cell, I'd be like, I'm probably neither. I know I'm stupid. Yeah. like, and I feel that that would be the end of it. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. I think young people growing up on the internet have, I don't know, they've simultaneously softened, but also developed a thicker skin to like just like verbal attacks, you know, just because they've seen a lot of weird shit. They have seen more than like, you know, the 13th century peasant would in a lifetime by the time they're like 10 because of like TikTok and YouTube and whatever. But also like, I want to say that the tech side of Twitter, they seem actually like pretty receptive and they don't freak out when you call them names. Mm-hmm. As long as they perceive like you're kind of on the same side as them, right? Like you're not trying to destroy their business or their livelihood or something. Because like I just make fun of like P. Marca. I call him like an egghead or something, like in the comments to when he was boosting me.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just because I wanted to like, you know, de-cringe it a little bit because, you know, it was, it's quite strange to see what was happening. But yeah, they're super kind of accepting of that stuff and they'll like reach out to you.
That's good. That,
The
sort of like, you'll kind of like the true test of friendship, I think, is like specifically through males is being able to like clown on each other.
Exactly.
And if you can do that, you're golden.
Yeah. And it's almost like a male sort of bonding ritual, right? Like if you can't take shit from each other, then you can't really be friends, right? Like you don't build the mutual respect until you do that.
Right, right. Yeah, the reason for that is like if we're going to war, you know, if we're going to go to war, I should at least know that you can handle a few jokes and be calling your mom unattractive. Yeah. You know, like that should be like the bare minimum that you should be able to take on.
Exactly.
Put on your scientist like hat now, like blue cap instead of like I have autism cap. Put on like I'm a machine learning, you know.
So, okay.
What is TikTok like doing that is like so incredible that like they're destroying Facebook, they're destroying Instagram? What are they doing so differently?
I don't have that good of a read on it, but I think that their machine learning is fantastic, obviously, their algorithm. But I don't think it's like years ahead of like Facebook or Instagram or something like that. I mean, Twitter, the algorithm is just trash. I know some of the people that work there, they tell me like it's just 10 years behind what it should be.
What do they say by it's trash? What do they mean by that?
I don't know. Like they're not using like the latest technologies, right? They're using things that are safe, stable, not risky. They don't work hard to like stabilize like the sparse neural net or whatever that Facebook might use. But I without getting into that, I don't think it's too important. Like at the high level, Twitter is more addicting to me than Facebook is, even though the Facebook algorithm is way better, right? And that to me speaks to the user base of the app. And I think it's the same thing with TikTok. Like the user base and the content format, they're like, they really unlocked something like similar to Vine, basically. Vine had like pretty much zero crazy algorithm, but people loved it anyway. Just that Twitter kind of sucked at growing it and they like let it die. But now like TikTok just has an incredibly young, talented user base that loves to like, you know, mess around with new formats and they generate new types of memes. And the algorithm is good, but it's not the make or break of it, I think. It's the format and the user base that like really knocked it out of the park. And yeah, like Instagram tried to make reels and whatever, but the they mastered the format first, and Instagram Reels will never have the same vibe because the culture is different on Instagram, right? It's all about like polish and showing off your nice lifestyle and things like that. And TikTok is about like jokes and niche humor and things like that. So yeah, what I'm trying to say is it's like intangible culture stuff that makes it good rather than pure algorithmic math magic.
So, yeah. Twitter. I mean, Twitter, I've really enjoyed it the most. I use it more than Instagram. I don't really even have a Facebook. I think the culture of Twitter can accurately be defined as curb stopping your enemy.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a war zone, right?
It really is. It's a bloodbath, man. It's like it's the land of the wolves. And everyone thinks it's, you know, not everyone, but people get into there like innocently skipping down the woods, you know?
Right.
And they don't realize what they're heading to.
Yeah. People come on and it's like a culture shock for them. They're like, why are these lowly peasants allowed to say mean things to me, you know?
Right. I remember you tweeted that for a while on Twitter, the first replier was like the top reply when you hit the reply section. I didn't know that, but amazing how it is. Like you're like a random anonymous account, and if you like quickly are the first account to like Oprah, you know, yeah. Like you're the first one there.
Right.
Everyone sees it.
Yeah, I actually don't remember saying that, but I think that might.
Wasn't
be
that
true.
You? Okay, I could remember. Be someone else. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I found that it's much easier. You know, DMing someone or following someone on Instagram feels weird if you don't really know them personally.
Yeah.
And on Twitter, I feel perfectly able to reply to people I don't follow. People reply to me who don't follow me, or even they follow me, I don't follow them. And messaging people and building sort of networks, you know, a lot of this is going to get very niche, but a lot of the cornerstone of what happens on the front end of what we see the tweets on Twitter and the engagement is like back end through group chats.
That's a real dark matter of Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, that ability of just like quick social group formation, I don't think is prevalent on any other social media app.
Yeah.
I want to switch this to sort of.
If I can say something about
that. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I think that is actually like explicit Twitter algorithm stuff. Like someone was telling me they do something called like SIM cluster grouping, like they try to find organic communities and they like encourage them to interact with each other on the timeline, something like that. So that could actually be like algorithmic, although I'm not confident about that.
Oh, cool. Okay. If you've ever sort of seen someone's random, they do this thing where if like 10 accounts or 5 accounts that you follow have liked a certain tweet, that tweet will pop up on your timeline, which I always think is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get your perspective on the future of SF or Silicon Valley, and then to some extent, whether we're stagnating, accelerating, degenerating, your view on, homeless men shitting in the streets of San Francisco while wearing Allbirds.
Yeah, that's a big question. I haven't been in San Francisco long enough to really have like a narrative structure about it. But like after I've been here, I think that it is less apocalyptic than what Twitter says it is, but still like kind of apocalyptic. So there's certainly like, you know, there will just be crimes, like violent crimes even, that the cops will not show up and respond to, or at least they won't respond for quite a while, right? And then maybe when they do come, there's like no evidence left to really do anything for you, right? They're not even going to file a police report. They're just going to kind of be like, bad luck, sorry. I don't know. I was at a McDonald's and just getting coffee or something, and there's a guy like just wailing on the guy serving him, and they call the cops, and that guy was there for like 15 minutes just like causing chaos, and the cops never came. So it's definitely real. I've seen it. But you know, I'm not too plugged in SF politics. It's just like a nightmare. I don't want to think about it too much.
Yeah, just go like your Bugman apartment.
Exactly.
Post a little, go to work, rinse, repeat.
Right. I mean, I'm sheltered from most things because, you know, I'm a decently paid tech worker. So I don't have to see all this like chaos all day for myself, but it's certainly there. I still think that SF has like a good enough future to survive because the amount of like capital that is just here, like social capital, brand capital, real financial capital too, because it's like the VCs, right? It's enough to keep going even in the face of like just extreme adversity and extreme like bad things happening. And that's like not good. It's like maybe walking zombie type situation, like something like that. And that's why I was somewhat cheering on the efforts of people trying to make Miami a thing or whatever. So there's like serious competitor, but I don't think that Miami is a serious competitor. I think I think that maybe it can support like a few niche like sub industries in tech, like perhaps crypto, perhaps like some operations heavy work that might require more like, you know, fast talking business guys, right? Then maybe that's good. But is there like a talent funnel for like top like computer science universities? Not really. Is there, I don't know, there's a lot of things that are desirable that are not there.
Yeah, I to some extent I agree. I think that the problem with Miami as well is that it's too much fun, and so it's difficult to get serious work done there because it is so enjoyable. Like, it's nice out, you know, the women are gorgeous. Like jet skis are like pretty cheap to rent. There's always parties going on. And at least with like New York and SF, you know, in New York, it's so cold outside that you kind of like are indoors a lot. In SF, you don't want to get stabbed. So like you stay indoors a lot. And so it's not that fun. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that has anything to do with it. I hope it happens. I hope Miami gets memed into existence. I'm like really, I'm really like looking forward to Delian memeing this into existence.
I think he has succeeded beyond like my wildest expectations. It's just like actually sticky, like people go there, but it's not nearly at the same scale as something like Silicon Valley, I think.
Yeah. Do you think to some extent it's like the new guard replacing the old? You know, like a lot of the previous generation tech moved to SF, moved to SV, you know, were there at the early stage, were able to get all the connections that they needed and started from the ground floor, and it benefited them. And now you've got latecomers coming to SF and they don't really get that benefit. And they Miami.
Go ahead.
No, that's it. Miami's sort of like a rerun of that.
Yeah. There's certainly like the golden age is over, I think. Like that would have been like mid 2010s, I believe, the golden age of like Silicon Valley, when it wasn't yet like a magnet for all like the top talent on earth. It was still like up and coming. And then slowly throughout that decade, the FANGs became like the five biggest corporations in the world, right? But there was a golden age there, I think, where they did weird shit. The VCs had silly parties and things like that. And a lot of that has come to an end, probably. That's my read on it. Again, I've been in San Francisco for like a year, so I probably I'm opining on things I don't understand, but I can tell from my reading, I think. But it's certainly like a new grad coming here does not get the same benefit. They're not going to go to their like fully loaded like Google campus or whatever, where they meet like some of the other top computer science people of their generation, because, you know, first of all, it's remote. Second of all, even if it's not remote, like only 10% of people are coming in. And you know, a lot of people have fucked off to like Hawaii or permanently remote working from somewhere much cheaper or something like that. So, yeah, but I cannot say that Miami is where you're going to go and like meet a lot of tech people. You're going to meet a certain subset, like the Founders Fund sphere of tech people, I think.
Yeah. I think all of both your and at least my existence to a greater extent, I think you're more grounded in what you talk about. We're just like epistemic trespassers, just Definitely. Talking about things we have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah. 100%.
And so like that is my entire framework of how I do Twitter. I just like read like half a tweet from an anonymous account and I'm just like, all right, makes sense. They're doing what now? The elites are doing this as well. Like I believe it. Like raw eggs. Okay. Just like slonking eggs. Okay, check. Raw milk, like check. Seed oils, like check. Like this is like the way to operate.
You know what that makes us, right? It makes us both word cells.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very sad, you know, gloomy day for the both of us. I mean, this is end times. The fact that you know, you're like a niche internet micro celebrity who's like probably like a 10 in SF. You know, you are a 10 in SF. I mean, there is no going higher. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Like maybe you just, you know, like I was reading this article. It was a Palladium Mac article that there was like an NFT NYC sort of like party day. And people were just like walking around with their phones with like their NFTs.
Yeah.
Like really end time shit. Like maybe you just do that with like your profile picture as a, like a, you know, you just walk around. With that around your neck. We do that at like parties, maybe, you know.
Yeah, man. It would be, I mean, it's like one of the things that sci-fi shows have imagined for a while, right? You have like the AR like lens plug-in or something, and then it tells you like the background of the person you're seeing. You know this person from XYZ. You connected with them on this social network, whatever. It would be kind of cool, I think. I'm also still anonymous, so.
Yeah. The other thing is, to some extent, I think we have that on Twitter as a sort of like when you go into someone's new account, it shows you how many of your friends follow them and who. I think that's like an incredible way of social proof. Mm-hmm. You know, if I find an account and 10 of my friends are following them already, I'm much more likely to follow them and interact with them.
Mm-hmm.
To a more serious topic, I want to know your thoughts on, you know, whether you believe we're in this era of technological stagnation.
It's a good question. I mean, it certainly seems like there are some like macroeconomic signals that maybe we are, right? Like the interest rates are zero or negative. And if there were a lot of hopeful projects for the future, there wouldn't be, right? It'd be like a lot of, a lot more expensive debt because there's projects to fund, right? But there isn't. And there's also just the kind of feeling that academia is failing. Like the people that are in it are no longer like weirdo geniuses. They're more like kind of professional frat bro professor types. I think that's actually somewhat true from what I've seen. Like professors nowadays are not like these absent-minded figures. And there are still some that exist like that. Like there's, actually, I don't want to say specifically because it would probably dox me, but there are some of those types, but there's also people that just are very good at writing grants and like convincing people to give them money for their academic projects and things like that. And I think there is certainly a place in academia for like slightly weird people, especially I think in computer science where money is abundant. There's like room for this because they don't need to work that hard to get grant funding, right? Like the computer security people are always weird as hell and I love them, and like cryptography people. And you know, there will always be like infinite demand for cryptographic research just due to security protocols. And like, I don't know, maybe even the NSA is paying them. I don't know. But, so like they don't have to work that hard to get grant funding. They can do their weird shit and it's pretty good, but in other places, like physical sciences, perhaps, it's somewhat harder. And obviously, in like once you get to the social sciences, it's like a total shit show because everybody wants to do like, you know, there's a giant demand to be like a history PhD or something. But not many actual job roles for that archetype, right?
Yeah, this is to some extent my criticism of people who are trying to found new universities. Barry Weiss is starting this new sort of college in Texas. Mm-hmm. I'm not bullish on it. The reason I say that is I think fundamentally we have to remember these are liberal arts educations. Mm-hmm. A lot of these universities teaching you how to think is a very aristocratic thing.
Yeah.
The other thing is when you're factoring in the cost, mm-hmm. it's clearly a scam.
Yeah, a little bit.
And the third thing is if you're truly brilliant, get a Thiel fellowship, right? Like why, you know, if you're truly smart, maybe you're low conviction. Okay. It's something else, but those who are high intelligence, high conviction, there's no reason to go to college. And maybe,
I guess, but I mean, our economy can support like what 100 Thiel fellows. It's not like scalable, right? Like the Thiel fellowship is also like a branding thing on its own. Just like a college, right? Like yeah, people have that on their resume and they're like, they walk into places and they get viewed differently. And I know a lot of Thiel fellows. Some of them are really cool, but they're all like kind of crazy. And like, I think like 70% of them end up doing nothing of note. But you know, they still have a soft landing because there's a Thiel name on their resume, right? But it's the same thing with college. That's why people do it. It's like
it's an insurance.
Right. Once you have Harvard on the resume, like you don't you could kind of fuck around, do whatever. And even if you're like 30 and haven't done anything, like you can probably make a soft landing in like a bank or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's a similar thing. Like people end up reinventing credentialism in weird ways. However, we could probably innovate on the credentialism. Maybe it shouldn't take 4 years and like mindless drudgery. Like, I don't want people to think that I'm like a bug man that thinks we should cancel like reading about history. It's more like, you know, I took classes that were like professionalism or something. And they're like, you need to wear a suit to interviews. And I'm like, that's the worst advice I've ever heard. Like in Silicon Valley, you're just like a strong reject if you wear a suit to your interview. But, you know, my point being, there's definitely stupid things that I didn't need to take.
A good friend of mine, you might know him, Rob Henderson, writes a lot about, you know, the reasons to still go to college. Mm-hmm. And one of them, and if you don't talk about this, let me know. Mm-hmm. One of the things as to why people will go to college, a four-year university, especially, is the ability to find a spouse. I mean, it is a 4-year period where it is carved out of your life, where your mix. It's like it is the most amount of people in the most amount of people of the opposite gender you will meet in the shortest period of time in your life.
Definitely. Go ahead.
Yeah, and sort of like the partying, and the mixers is something that you will never get again. And so if you look at it like, listen, am I willing to spend so much money?
Yeah.
For a college education, which you're not really paying for an education, you're paying to find a spouse.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like one of the best social clubs that like kind of elite people are going to find, right? I think that's definitely correct. Yeah. The dating scene in college was like, I haven't seen anything like it since, but I'm also living in San Francisco, which is a hellhole for young men, but it's all right.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just the level of sort of like the women who are inclined to go to the city, the dynamics of the city, the levels of socialization of the people who move to the city?
It's a combination of all of the above. I mean, I think the gender ratios are just bad. That's like the primary thing. Like that's the cardinal sin, right? You're not going to recover from that. But then like number two, I think that there's like a certain archetype of guy that, you know, every girl here will date someone like him and they'll become jaded to that like whole class of like tech bro engineer that is performing well or whatever. And, you know, cause they might have something lacking that they're looking for and didn't end well. And it goes from there, right? It's, And I get it. I sympathize, you know.
Yeah, it I've thought a lot about higher education and what needs to be done to fix it. The first thing is students have been sold on jobs that don't exist. You know, even in CS, it basically gets that there are more graduates than jobs. And then that's without even factoring, you know, immigration or remote work.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the humanities, it's a bloodbath. Yeah. Hard sciences as well.
Yeah.
And so they've been lied to and essentially scammed, promised mm-hmm. a job that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, all right, well, how do we fix this? One thing that could be done is to allow, first of all, students to declare bankruptcy on their loans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the only loans that you can declare bankruptcy on.
Yeah.
Remove it from being government backed. And so what yeah. would then that would force to happen is you're only going to get a loan from a private institution.
Okay. Yeah.
That now will assess whether the place you're going to will be financially beneficial to repay this loan.
Yeah.
And the other third thing is you start gutting the humanities, because now all of a sudden we're not funding an archaeology student to go to school. These departments have to shrink. You cut out the educators. You cut out the administrators. And so the right has this warped perception of if we just got enough. I wish they even thought this. They're like even too cowardly than this. If we just, you know, fought back against these professors and academia, we'd fix it. It's like, no, yeah. it's financial. And mm-hmm. so I think culture is downstream from mm-hmm. finance.
Yeah.
And the way you fix it is gutting their funding.
Yeah.
Because the other thing is, you know, what China does on TikTok is they'll only show videos of engineers, of sort of like of construction feats.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like, you know, you ever watch like a YouTube video of how they like a random village will construct a like a little yeah. dam or a little pond yeah. or whatever. Right. Like those they types of some, videos. Yeah, they
have
yeah.
some really fun like techno-optimist propaganda, I have to say.
Right, right. And we have people fighting in the street. And so mm-hmm. to some extent you can use sort of the government and propaganda mm-hmm. to like achieve what the next generation wants to become. Like no kid today really wakes up and is like, I want to be an astronaut, to the extent that the amount of kids used to be mm-hmm. decades ago.
Yeah.
And so like you can not very easily, but you can change what younger generations want to become.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the messaging now is just like become a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
What yeah. a lot of people don't realize is like, even when you get there, mm-hmm. it's not, I have a lot of friends who like, you're sort of like YouTubers.
Yeah.
And they really thought that like once they'd make it to a certain amount of subscribers, you know, their life yeah. goal would be achieved. And it's right. like, it's never that case. It's right. never that case. Yeah, it seems like, and this is like very far away from sort of like, the tech side of Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like our nation's elites have mm-hmm. abdicated responsibility for doing good.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of set with everyone kind of just like fending for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Without any rudder on the ship.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right about a lot of those things, but I think it's because like the parallels you draw between like US and China propaganda, it's because of like where we are in history, right? The US is like the stereotypical end of history, post-scarcity kind of place where, you know, nobody really needs to starve here, right? Like if you're of sound mind, which is, I mean, that's a big ask. I know a lot of people are not of sound mind and need to be protected, but you're probably going to get enough welfare to like at least feed yourself and find a place to live. I don't think that's true in China. I think probably babies are still getting lead poisoning and dying and all this shit. And so they're not at the end of history. They have places to go, and that's why they train so many engineers and there's like stuff to build and they invest in like huge infrastructure projects and stuff like that. But even that is like, I don't think that's going to be permanent for them either. It's like, eventually probably they're going to want to do some softer stuff. The elite class is going to become experts in like the humanities and they're going to study liberal arts and all that stuff. It's like, it's almost like a luxury good, right? Education in like, environmental justice or something, right?
It's yeah, luxury belief. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
It's a luxury belief. It's just, it's also like a luxury lifestyle. It's like the product of somebody who probably has fairly rich parents or like fairly rich ancestry in some way. And they're like, they don't feel that scared to do something random. In a way, that's actually good, right? That's an indication of societal success that we can support so many people studying kind of like economically unproductive things that are still probably fun for them. And, you know, maybe that's okay to some extent, but also it feels like the US is maybe not thriving, right? So I don't know. It's a hard thing to square. Like, what do you do in post-scarcity when you actually don't need everybody to study productive things and you can just rack up like monumental student debt and like the government will just like underwrite it and be like, it's okay, go study environmental justice.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The a good mark for civilizational growth is not everyone has to be a farmer.
Right.
And
right.
It frees up a bunch of population to some mm-hmm. extent pursue like be bored and figure stuff out.
Right.
And so I think to add on to what you were saying, you know, that is productive as long as they are not working to actively erode civilization.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
And it seems like, you know, these climate activists are bored, but they're not just, you know, writing plays. They're like, how do we subvert the nation?
Mm-hmm.
And sort of like inflict as much destruction as fast as possible.
Yeah, it's a bit of a death cult, right? Like degrowth. We need to atone for our sins. It's like very kind of religious overtones.
Yeah. But everyone needs a set of beliefs and principles that they can dogmatically follow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to the exact same extent, it is like the climate movement.
Mm-hmm.
It's to some extent an extension of a way of repentance. Yeah. For sins of your ancestors.
Right. Right. Yeah, I wouldn't want to draw parallels between everything in politics and religion. I think that's played out and stupid, but the climate thing, it feels very like primordial and religious in a way. It's almost like the first religious instinct, right? Like protect the earth, protect your surroundings, atone for what you've done, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, they're like kind of Incas, you know, mm-hmm. sacrificing like tributes that won't work.
Yeah,
but like the step above this is none of these climate activists are willing to, you know, my big problem with San Francisco crime mm-hmm. is like people aren't willing to point in like the direction that it is like coming from. Like it's like the reason why San Francisco is so bad is like you got a bunch of homelessness, you got a bunch of drugs. Like nobody's willing to actually point and be like, you know, that is the problem that it is.
Mm-hmm.
And another extension is like point at the politicians and be like, you guys are the problem.
Mm. Yeah.
And another level to that is if the population of a city, of a state is not willing to point in the right direction with the amount of fervor necessary, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing I can do in Florida to fix San Francisco.
Yeah.
And if the people of San Francisco aren't willing enough to change it, then, you know, it is what it is.
Right.
But back to climate activists. It also seems, you know, Rob also talks about this, that if we put all of this activism in a lens of both social climbing,
mm-hmm.
And also finding a spouse, I think mm-hmm. a lot of political activity is both intersexual competition,
mm-hmm.
And an attempt to find a spouse.
Mm.
And so what would happen in a lot of IVs for protests, you would have these big protests and they would always stop right before, you know, finals or midterm season would start.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would leave in relationships. And so okay. You would go, you would protest, you would yell like it's fun and you would leave with the spouse. And it wow. makes much more mm-hmm. sense in that context.
Yeah. Where do I find the nearest protest?
Yeah, man. I mean, there's another thing called woke fishing, where dudes will make their politics less. So Rob wrote this in the piece, in one of his pieces. He was like, a friend of mine in DC told me that, you know, on Hinge, if you write moderate, you're actually conservative.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was the one who showed him that. It was because it's so true. If you're in DC and you write moderate on Hinge, you're secretly a conservative. And people look at it and they're like, this guy's conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think like your political classification, you know, is long enough to be listed in the box there.
Yeah.
You know? But it's sort of when you think about it, everything is just like sexual competition, and then it just all makes sense. Why are certain groups of people angry at others? Why are sort of like, why are 40-year-old, you know, single women like, you know, angry at the world, you know, because, you know, to some extent they don't have kids and they don't have meaning. And it's like,
she's in a class of her own. I don't want to extrapolate her.
Talking about Taylor Lorenz.
Okay.
I mean, that's now what that I'm think seeing. About it, I mean, maybe not.
Yeah.
Like, what are they going to do? Like, write another hit piece on me? I mean, I'll take another one. It's like the fastest way to get in contact with me is the New York Times hit piece.
Yeah.
Like, I don't respond to text, but you know, if you write a hit piece, you know, I'll at least, I'll look at it.
Uh-huh.
I won't care, but I'll look at it.
Sure.
And so, yeah, man, I think this entire journey has been like hilarious watching you grow your account, and sort of swindle your way into the discourse, like schizophrenically tunnel your way through across enemy lines, not even across enemy lines, just like tunnel your way through into like different destinations on the world.
Yeah.
And just like lob like grenades of like new, you know, vocab,
right?
And keep on doing it till people like adopt it,
right? I mean, I'm just really thankful that like Twitter has given me this outlet, right? I mean, like, I wasn't even really a poster until the pandemic hit, and I was just like lonely and bored and didn't have a community, so I started posting a lot, and it. In the beginning, it was like slow going, but then it really took off probably around the time I got bigger in like the tech side and made these like shape rotation jokes and whatever. And yeah, now we're here.
Well, the other thing is you're, and this is true, is you're making the tech world fun online. That sounded like very NPR, like cringe wise. But it's true, man. I think like the tech side of Twitter is more interesting than the political side of Twitter. Like I get it. The woke stuff is bad. Ban it. CRT, horrible. Ban it. You know, how many times can we talk about it? I would rather see like two, you know, half mentally ill grown men going at it. You know, that's what I want to see. Like, I want to see the Thunderdome. That's what I want.
Absolutely love it, because there's like an output, right? There's an output product. Like, politics is almost fundamentally like zero sum, somewhat nihilistic, and the Twitter people are just mad yelling at each other, but they're all kind of they're ineffectual, right? They're like, they can't do anything, but the tech people, they can do things. They're active in the world, you know, even if it means that they're building some tiny B2B SaaS company. It's like a real positive gradient, right? Sometimes, maybe not always, but I think the majority of times that they're making some impact. And sometimes they make huge, epical, civilization-changing impact, like, you know, in the likes of Mark Andreessen inventing the Netscape browser or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I'm really glad to be shitposting with him instead of with some local campaign manager that is not going to amount to anything.
You know? Right, right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's an interesting Paul Graham essay that was sent to me after I tweeted something out about like the differences in cities, where he kind of goes that like LA's got its own feel, SF got its own feel, DC, New York. My addition to that is sort of like my take is like LA is a city that its fabric is based on presenting yourself as someone you are not, the acting industry. DC is all about power, governmental power, or my addition to that is the perception that you have power is often so good
who
enough.
You're close to, right?
Yes. Yeah. Your proximity to power. New York I think, is finance, how much money you have.
Yeah.
Miami, I think, is how good looking you are. Mm-hmm. Chicago is like gun violence.
Right.
And sort of SF.
That's brutal.
Yeah. Okay. SF is, I think, power, but an entirely different rail of not relying on governmental institutions to get things done. And I think I think SF is a greater center of power than DC in, you know, ruddering where the United States is going.
That's, I mean, I would agree, but I did not expect you to think that. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that the real power, I mean, we essentially have corporations and tech companies that are more powerful than the U.S. government, right? Mm. I mean, you've got Google that is changing. So when Google changes information of what is presented, they're actually to some extent changing the populace and how they vote.
Right.
They're changing the information they see. They're shifting, you know, what people believe. And so they have a stranglehold on sort of the ideology of America and where we're headed.
Right, but at the same time, I don't think Google is free, right? It's not like Sundar Pichai gets to say, okay, tomorrow we're going to implement this policy and everybody will think Y and Z. It's more like...
Yeah, I think it's a slow drip, but it's a slow drip of you won't see Fox News, you'll only see CNN, MSNBC, NPR, right?
No, but I think my point is more like there's this concept called like Balaji has been on it, and you know, some other like fringe right wing elements, like anarcho tyranny, something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, who are the shot callers, right? Who is censoring these things at Google? It's like kind of like a nebulous force of like left wing thought leadership that does not, it's not controlled by Google. It's controlled by broader culture. It's organic. And then it circles into Google via its employees and their demands and the executive suite's demands and things like that. And they have to toe the line because other parts of culture will cancel them if they don't. Like the government is absolutely going to come after them if they don't toe the line somewhat, right? Like in China, it's just far more obvious. Like Xi Jinping will go and send a letter to... what's it like ByteDance or something like take down criticism of the Xinjiang camps, whatever. And they'll just do it. But here it's like a lot more subtle. It's a lot more dancing around the issue, but you could see it clearly like in the cascades, right? Like someone takes down, like, I think it was Apple that takes down, what's that guy? I'm already forget his name. Alex Jones, the Alex Jones podcast.
Yeah. Him and Spotify and everyone everywhere
right,
else.
Right, right. But the thing is, here's the interesting thing, right? The night before, Mr. Mark Zuckerberg released a statement. He's like, I believe in free speech. I'm not going to take down Alex Jones's podcast, even though I think he's disgusting or whatever. And the next morning, Apple takes down his podcast, right? And then instantly, like, Facebook takes down the page too, doing a complete 180 of what they said the night before, and everybody else takes it down too. And why is that? It's because they don't really have free will. You know, they're like, they cannot be the odd one out, or they're going to be targeted by special interest groups, the government, antitrust, whatever. So like they're, I think they're less powerful than people think. They're kind of reactionary rather than tone setting. They're like tone receptors more so.
Yeah. But yeah, man, I think you're one of the more interesting, you know, intelligent people in the sphere. And so the reason I say that is not just personally, it is I have a lot of respect for people who anonymously do well on Twitter because it actually shows that you're much better than everyone else. If you're able to anonymously build a successful Twitter account, it shows A, like a lot of determination, but B, a very high level of creativity and value to followers. And so like the way you grow on Twitter is either by providing value in both either an intellectual sense, a community sense, or through like a meme sense.
Yeah.
And it's not an easy feat, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think the internet is like somewhat meritocratic for Anon posters, but I don't know. Maybe I also do ride off the coattails of like, I don't know, associate myself with things like, I don't know, machine learning, right? And that's popping off these days, or actually it has been for like the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And because I say I'm doing that, then maybe that gives me a little bit of a boost, you know, because like you could make a Web3 account today and you'll probably just get followers from people searching like Web3, right? So yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to downplay myself, I guess. I'm being humble, but my point is that I don't know, I don't think it's like purely skill based, but yeah, thank you, I appreciate it. Yeah
man, I think this is a good place to end the note. Rune, mm-hmm. Thanks for coming on, man. I'm like very excited to see what new schizophrenic ramblings come out from Twitter. But yeah, okay. Man, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks, Kyle. See ya.